I'm Christy Potter. I'm a journalist, I'm an author, and I'm going gray. This show is about all the amazing, creative, and inspiring people out there every day, making the world a more interesting place. Before we get to today's guest, a couple of quick things to share with you. First, please check out my author page on Amazon.com. It has links to both of my books, which are available in paperback and for Kindle, and also I have a new picture up. And I was having a really good hair day, and I know you wouldn't want me to have wasted that. So that's at amazon.com/author/Christy Potter. Also, while you're on the web, take a moment, please, and visit audible.com, the audiobook people. Two reasons for you to do that. Number one, because they have just a ton of books, both old and new. And number two, because you listen to this podcast, you can get a free month's membership and a free audiobook download. How cool is that? Just go to audible.com/goinggray and get signed up. I'm really excited about my guest today. So to help us celebrate St. Patrick's Day, we are joined by Cynthia Smith, who, along with her husband Steve and some other friends, make up the Irish band Smitty's Kitchen. Cynthia, thanks for being here.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Tell us about Smitty's Kitchen.
We started out playing in my kitchen, actually. That's how the name...
Hi.
Yeah, the name is pretty self-explanatory. We sure. Actually, we have friends over, we play music, we have a lot of food, a lot of drink, and sometimes a lot of drink, and then some more drink, and then some more food, and play some more music, and, you know, it just got to a point where a few of us decided to just come down every week, and then there are friends that come down way north from Haverton and Philadelphia, and once in a while we would all come down, get together, have food, have a party, play music, and the group of Smitty's Kitchen has been friends for a very long time, and we have played some sets repeatedly over and over that we just thought, yeah, we should record these things, you know, so that is how it came about. I had some musical ideas in my head. Mostly they were set combinations that had a theme. And, mm-hmm. Also, because I'm a classical pianist, I can't help myself. I love Irish music, but I wind up making these arrangements of classical, Irish classical, however you want to term, whichever word comes first.
Right.
They're just Irish tunes that I've thought sounded appropriate to make a classical composition of, like, for instance, Her Mantle So Green. The band was they're pretty creative. They are very creative. I shouldn't say pretty creative. They're very creative. They're all excellent musicians. There's no one lacking. We all have our moments and we all have our strengths and weaknesses, but when you put us all together, we all bring out the best in each other, and at least that's how we feel. We bring out the best in each other. And we managed to pull it off. Between the six musicians on the first album, we had maybe 11 or 12 instruments to draw from, to use, wow, to color our, mm-hmm, our palette, our musical palette. And on the second album, which should be released this month, actually, we also have the same thing. Everyone's, you know, multi-musicians, and we can play at least two, if not three or four instruments. We added everything. We put everything we had into it. So
right.
we managed to make a lot of color, if you want to call it that, musical color, to whatever our ideas were as far as tune sets and expression, musical expression.
Mm-hmm. Now, you play the piano, you said, and also, didn't you tell me the Irish whistle?
Yes, I do.
Okay. What are some of the other instruments?
Well, my husband plays the bawron and bones. The bawron, mm-hmm, bawron is the Irish drum, and the bones, actually, centuries ago, would have been literally goat ribs. They're just kind of flat but curved little things that make a rather clicking noise, which you can hear in the track The Phrygian Whistle from the first album.
Wow, that's very...
He said, when we were done, we had to record that track maybe three or four times. When we were done, my poor husband was rubbing his shoulder some way, because he had been steadily clicking those things straight on through.
Wow.
Let's see. Tom Gittleman plays the concertina, the mandolin, the bouzouki. He plays a number of other instruments that we did not use. Bombard, for instance, which is a kind of a Greek woodwind instrument. Our fiddlers played the violin and the fiddle. That was pretty much their. Actually, our fiddler on the second album also plays the harp. Our flutist, whistle player, is Michael Copeland. He is the world famous Irish flute and whistle maker. Everyone who plays Irish whistle or Irish flute knows about him. His instruments are highly sought after, and at this point, they're very expensive.
I'll bet.
Yeah, well, he's getting towards retirement age. He's not making them quite as much as he was before.
Sure.
Yeah, so let's see, who am I missing here? Tom Kingston plays the piano. Actually, he told me once he plays about 13 different instruments, and I just dropped my jaw on that one. But
Of course.
yeah, on our second album, he is there on the whistle and the bouzouki. Bob Bender is an awesome guitarist. We just love to show him off. He is on the Lonesome Jig. There is no other guitarist there. He makes his guitar sound like two. And I remember asking him how that happened. He said that's called floating. So I every time I listen to that, I just think, boy, he is something else.
Wow.
Yeah. So I'm missing somebody here. It's me, Smitty, Tom, Marion, Tom Kingston, Bob. June Bender is our fiddler on the first album. She's off to college pursuing her master's. She's Bob Bender's daughter.
Okay.
She's only in her 20s. She's a stunning violinist. Yeah,
Wow.
she really was just stunning on our first album. And I don't think I'm missing anybody else. I think I got everybody.
Okay. Now you and I were having a conversation before. You were telling me how because you all play Irish music, but you're not Irish, you bring a lot of American influence into your music. Talk about that a bit.
That is a strange kind of fact that I think a lot of American musicians who play Irish music overlook. The fact is that we are not Irish citizens. Not all of us. Some of us are. Some of us can carry dual citizenships, and that's nice. But for the most part, a lot of us just love Irish music because it's part of our heritage. But we're actually American citizens, American mutts, really. And
Right.
so when we take these lovely and interesting Irish jigs, hornpipes, reels, slip jigs, all these beautiful tunes that talk to you deep down inside your, I wouldn't call it cultural memory. We also add our American cultural memory, and there's such a rich fabric of music in America, and we can't help it. We add it. Whether we mean to or not, it's just there. For instance, the piano. Like I said, I'm a classical pianist. I teach piano lessons. I teach classical piano. I can't help but bring that into my music. It's just there. It's part of who I am. But I incorporate all those arrangements that I make of Irish music with what I know as an American classical pianist.
Right. No, that makes sense, and I think it must give the music even a more of a richer. Not necessarily richer. I'm not sure of the word I'm looking for there, but to kind of give it a different kind of depth, a cultural depth, perhaps is the way I'm trying to say
Richer is a good word. It
Yeah.
adds, it just takes that fabric and puts some more colors into it. It's comparing fabrics to music is really not maybe accurate, but you're basically creating a tapestry of sound when you're playing music or record, mostly when you're recording music. And
Right.
so our album coming up is pretty exciting because we didn't do any dubbing on the first album. We recorded that album all in one day. It was a
Wow.
grueling 13-hour recording session. We were all tired and cross by the time. Hungry.
I'm
We
sure.
were very glad it was over, but we basically all stuck our nose to the grind. We had the engineers for that one day, and that was all we had, and we got the thing done. And I'm so proud of this group for that. The second album, we had a lot more time. We did it in 3 10-hour recording sessions, and we were able to do some dubbing over, which we didn't do on the first album. We did do on the second, and in the dubbing process, we were able to add even more sound. So we're pretty excited about it.
What's the second album called?
It will be called A Second Season.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, it's okay. Our second album. We kind of like to stick to the kitchen theme, but also one of our musicians, Bob Bender, wanted to have a seasonal theme to the title, and the best we could come up with seasoning. Seasoning your food. Seasoning us, I guess. We're seasoned musicians, I suppose. I don't know. It just seemed very appropriate to call it A Second Season.
I like that, actually. That's very clever. I have my next question has actually two parts, but they're different but related. I want to know what it is about Irish music that appeals to you, and then I also want to know, as part of that, what you think it is about Irish music that has such a mass appeal.
Both are very hard questions to answer, and I think the only way I could pinpoint an accurate answer to that would be to say that we all have in our subconscious cultural memories, be that Italian or Irish or African American. We have basically things that maybe it's in the DNA, I have no idea, or something that just talks to us. For instance, when I play the piano, Bach talks to me constantly. I may play Beethoven, but I'll come back to a Bach piece. Then I'll play Chopin, then I'll come back to a Bach piece. Then I'll play Irish, and I'll come back to Bach over and over and over again. I think that Irish music has that kind of talking, quote-unquote, thing that goes on, as I say, which comes out of your cultural memory. So being, you know, my husband is basically, his body's about 85% Irish blood.
Right.
Yeah, mine's a little less than that, but at the same time, the music just talks to me. There are tunes that just go over, and out of the blue, they will just come up and create an earworm that just goes over and over and over. That's the only way I could really describe. I think that's the answer to both questions. The music talks to people. Mm-hmm. Also, there's the dance aspect. A lot of Irish and a lot of all Celtic music is created for the purpose of dancing. I mean, we have polkas. We have slip jigs. A slip jig is a dance. We have a jig, which is also a dance. A reel, I'm not sure what gets done. Oh, step dancing gets done to that. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. If you were Breton, you would have folk dances that would go with your Breton music. Galicia, the same thing, Spanish dancing. If you're a Scottish, you have all kinds of flings and stuff that go, you know, those kinds of dances that go with that type of music. But it basically comes from being dance music.
Right, right. That festive feeling.
Yes.
And very cultural. I completely agree. My paternal side of my family is Celtic, and I think that's why it always sounds like home to me.
Yeah, home is a good word to put it. Yes, it's musical home.
Yeah. Now you also do, and you can talk about this a bit if you want to. You also do colonial music. Tell us a little bit about that.
Again, we have a rich fabric of stuff that goes into making colonial music. The colonial era of America was a time when people were migrating across the pond to America and bringing their culture with them. So you have this rich, another rich fabric of music, which is Renaissance era, Baroque, music from the theater, which was becoming very popular in America at the time. You have the jigs and the reels and the hornpipes. You have church music, which was dominant everywhere in America. And the funny thing is, I'll tell you a little story here. Thomas Jefferson took a very old jig called the Gabio and had lyrics put to it and used that for his presidential campaign song.
Really? I did not.
Yes, it was called Jefferson's March. Yep. So that was one that's on that album. That was just a project Michael Copeland and I got gaga about, and we dragged Smitty into it <It's> like, wait, I'm not sure. He came in kicking and screaming, but
poor city.
We have no mercy on him, really.
That's not first goat bones and now this.
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah, we just say, can you do this? And he obliges us. So he's very... we are particularly proud of a track which is on our second album called, we're calling it Cindy's Green Set. It's a set of reels that goes along at 90 miles an hour, I guess. And he brings it in with a drum solo. And, you know, I have to say, listening to that, the drumming is awesome.
Wow.
Yeah, it was just one of those tracks that when I heard it played back, I said, yeah.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, and during the recording process, it was kind of, we got off to a bit of a shaky start. How fast is it going to go? I don't want to go. A lot of, but we all put our nose to the grind and we got it done. And when I heard it played back, like I said, it was, yeah, I like
I
this
love
one.
Moments. Those are great artistic moments.
Yeah, they are.
When you think, wow, I actually pulled that off.
Yeah,
that's
he did it. And, you know, when my husband heard it played back, he looked at me and it's kind of, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's all right.
Yeah, seriously, that was your I told you so moment. Good for you.
Yeah, because it actually got to be a bit of a domestic moment during the recording session. And it was one of those ones where, like, nobody else in the group wants to get involved with it, but they have to say something because we're all recording as a group. And finally, Tom Gittleman said, well, you know, you have to let Cindy have some leeway here. She's whistling it. Thank you, Tom. So, we got it done.
Yeah, it sounds like you're all a family.
We are. We have been friends for a long time. And it's funny that you should use the word family because the mix got a little delayed here. We're going to the mastering very soon. There was one little track there that somebody got upset about and said, I can't let that go. And when I approached the band about it, Bob Bender's response to me was, oh, peace in the family. Just do what you have to do. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can see that.
Yep.
Yeah, I can see that. Especially when you've been friends and together and recording for so long. And artists are notoriously temperamental. So, you know, all different personality types.
Music is an art form and it's very personal. We all take our music very personally. It's personal expression. There's one track on this album. It was a dream I had. It sounds very strange. I actually woke up in the wee hours on a January morning in 2011. I had heard this music in a dream, and it was just beautiful. I kind of fumbled my way down to the piano and propped myself up and wrote down the dots. Well, when I presented this idea to the band, they kind of had these blank expressions on their face because they hadn't heard it. And what do you want to call it, hearing in a dream? You don't actually hear music with your ears in a dream. But they just weren't understanding what I was trying to say. But as we continued to work on it, they were starting to realize, oh, yeah, I can hear this. And the funny thing is when the responses came back from the first mix, they were all, nice track, dreamy, sounds like, yeah, it was a dream, but it was one of those things, they'd never heard it, so for them I was actually speaking Greek to them, you know, some language they couldn't understand, but when we heard it played back, I my first response when I heard it played back was, thank you all for helping me to recreate this what I heard in a dream.
Wow.
I'm looking forward to having that, an MP3 of that to give you.
Oh, that'd be great. Yeah, that'd be great. All right. I think that's really all of my specific questions, and I don't want to run us too far out of time because I would like to play a clip of your music for our listeners as well. So before we wrap up, just tell us real quick where we can find your music and find out more about Smitty's Kitchen.
Well, if you Google Smitty's Kitchen, you'll find a few pages of links. Our website is smittyskitchenmusic.com. That's where you go. We're on Facebook as well. Smitty's Kitchen was on Facebook. And I need a manager at this point. I want to say we're on Twitter and Bing and Ping or whatever they are. I can't keep up with them all and be a musician at the same time. And you know, this is a funny thing, too. We all have day jobs. So
right.
We're all trying to juggle our day jobs and do this recording and performing stuff. And but those are the places to go. Google Smitty's Kitchen. Go to smittyskitchenmusic.com. We're very accessible. The phone numbers and the email. There's a contact page on the website. So
right. Okay. Great. That sounds great. I really appreciate you taking the time to be here with us and helping us kick off St. Patrick's Day. It's been a lot of fun.
Oh, it was my pleasure.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Cindy.
You're welcome.
Before we wrap up here today, since it is St. Patrick's Day and we could all use a little Irish music, let's listen to some of Smitty's Kitchen. Here they are with the old Irish love song, Her Mantle So Green. That was Smitty's Kitchen with Her Mantle So Green. All right, that's it for me. I will be back here again on Wednesday with another great guest. In the meantime, you can find my books on Amazon.com. You can find earlier episodes of Going Gray on iTunes. And as always, you can find me at ChristyTheWriter.com.